Thank you for downloading this episode of Folk on Foot. Before we start, I just wanted to share a brief message. If you like what we do, we really need your support to keep going. You can join our wonderful band of members and you'll get great rewards. These include access to our amazing Folk on Foot on Film archive of hundreds of songs shot on location on our travels around the UK and Ireland. To sign up, just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. You'll also get an ad-free version of all our episodes and an email postcard from me each time we go on a walk. If you just want the ad-free version, it'll cost you £3 a month, and you can get it through your Apple Podcast app or at folkonfoot.com/support us. Finally, if you don't want to make a regular commitment but do want to show how much you love us, you can simply buy us a coffee. You can also do that at folkonfoot.com/support us. Every penny we get goes back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So thank you and enjoy the walk.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We come to the great city of Birmingham to take a trip through its music and history. And who better as our guide than John Wilkes, the singer and guitarist? He's also the man behind the Grizzly Folk blog, the Trad Folk website, and the Old Songs podcast. So he's steeped in digging out the history of English music. And Birmingham is a place very close to his heart. So it'll be a joy to walk with him through this great city. John,
hi.
Good to see you. Thank right you. Outside New Street Station under this beautiful chrome... What is it? A chrome excrescence? A chrome...
That's a word.
Protuberance.
A protuberance, yeah. I mean, explosion. Chrome explosion, I think.
And so we're just here in the right in the heart of Birmingham city centre. Do you feel very at home here in Birmingham?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. It's not where I grew up, but it was our playground when we were, you know, teenagers. I lived sort of 5 or 6 miles out of Birmingham, and we used to come in here, you know, every weekend, busking, you know, drinking, carousing. And so, yeah, coming out onto this concourse here outside New Street Station, seeing the rotunda next to us, the big symbol of Birmingham, it's always, yeah, it's like, it's, yeah, I remember Billy Connolly saying in a sketch of his that when he got off the train in Glasgow, he could feel Glasgow oozing up through his feet. And I kind of feel like that. It's sort of like, Ah, here we are again.
And what journey have you got planned for us today? Where are you taking us on?
Well, we're going on a mixture of places. So we're going to go down into Digbeth first, which is where a wonderful old source singer called Cecilia Costello lived and was born and raised, and she gave to the tradition so many wonderful songs. So we're going to go down and have a look at that. We're going to walk up New Street, which has been, you know, a thoroughfare through Birmingham, I think, since the 1200s. We're going to walk through, we're on the edge of the Bullring, which, you know, has been here since the 1150s, or a market at least. And then we're going to go up to Snow Hill, which is a sort of an industrial part of the city. And then we're probably going to end up down by Gas Street Basin and see some of the famous canals. Supposedly Birmingham has more canals than Venice, so we're going to go and see one of those.
Well, it sounds fantastic. Let's get going.
Yeah.
So, John, what started you looking into songs from Birmingham?
I came across this phrase. I don't know where I got it from. Like, I don't think I made it up. I think I read it somewhere. But this phrase that traditional songs are songs with a postcode. And that kind of really appealed to me, and I found it incredibly romantic. The idea that, you know, you could sing songs in a specific space or a specific place and know that you were singing songs that people had sung in that spot for potentially centuries before.
I must say, that's part of the inspiration of Folk on Foot, you know, that to me, to hear a song sung in a place, knowing that the song is rooted in that place, has some kind of special emotion about it.
Yeah, it's sort of like being able to sort of, like, sing across the generations, collaborate with people who have sung these songs hundreds of years ago. It's a sort of weird timelessness.
And did you find in Birmingham a rich history of song? You know, is this city in particular full of songs that have been made and then handed down?
Yeah, I mean, it's the more that I looked, the more that I found. So I started off with a book that many of your listeners will probably know, and it's called Songs of the Midlands, and it was put together by a scholar called Roy Palmer, who was based in Birmingham and did a lot of work with folk song and folk clubs in the 60s and the 70s. And I got that book and I started having a look on the English Folk Dance and Song Society's website, where you can trace those songs using a Google map to see exactly where they were collected. And there were no songs collected really from where I specifically were from, but there were a lot in Birmingham. We're going to cross over here.
Okay.
And the more that I looked into it, the more that I found that actually Birmingham had this huge history of creating songs. Birmingham obviously is known for the Industrial Revolution, and it had this nickname, the toy shop of the nation, because it made so much stuff, you know, from chains to sort of pen nibs and sort of all sorts of things. I mean, where we're about to walk into now would have just been this huge, vast slum of people. And the noise and the smell must have just been intense and incredible, because it's all, you know, metal workers, basically. But then there was this other sort of slightly lesser known industry, which was songs. And, you know, I've started to think that Birmingham may have been the jukebox of the nation as well. Roy Palmer pointed out that in 1800, there were no song publishers in Birmingham. And by 1885, there were no song publishers in Birmingham. But in those sort of years in between, those 85 years, 40 major song publishers came and went, and probably published street ballads. Close to 1 million, he estimated.
Wow.
So, you know, huge amounts of them would have just been doggerel, but there are some absolute gems in there that have been completely forgotten. So we're on, this is Hurst Street, so we're now in the gay quarter, and also the Chinese quarter of Birmingham. But we'll be going around the corner in a minute into an area called Pershore Street. And that, as I say, would have just been intense in terms of, you know, the amount of people. I mean, I did a little research for you this morning, and I knew that the population boom had been huge, but in Birmingham, you know, in about 1700, I think the population was 11,000, and by 1800 it had gone to 100,000.
Wow.
The city sucked in people from the countryside coming in to find work. Yeah, just, I mean, the absolute definition of a melting pot.
And just to get a picture in my mind of what would have happened with these millions of songs being published on bits of paper, where would they go once they'd been printed, and how would they be sold?
So effectively what would happen was that you would have somebody who knew the tune. So if you look at a surviving broadside ballad now, sometimes, but not always, it'll say at the top, to be sung to the tune of such and such. And then, of course, you've got to know what that tune is. And sometimes those tunes have vanished as well, so we don't actually know what those tunes were. But at the time, what would have happened is somebody would have had this sheath of songs standing on the side of the street, and they would have been singing their best tune to it. And if you liked that tune, and if you liked the sound of that song, you would go up and buy it off them. And those songs were quite often local stories. I mean, there's this kind of idea that folk singers were kind of like, or news readers of the day. That news that they were telling was often stuff to do what was going on locally. So you'll get songs with amazing titles. A ballad on the boxing match between Bill Giles and Bob Newman for the princely sum of £25 on the 1st of April 1825. And it's like really specific stuff, you know, not the sort of thing that rolls off your tongue, but really the sort of thing that people would go, I was at that boxing match, I want a bit of a souvenir of that. Or it might be something to do with quite often quite grim circumstances.
What happens if we go down here in between the two buildings here? There's a narrow cut through.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to walk down through an area called the Arcadian. This is, I used to come drinking here with my friends when we were wee. Where we are now is we're sort of encroaching on the edge of an area called Digbeth, which I think for a lot of people who pass through Birmingham is better known as Birmingham Coach Station. But it's Digbeth was this area that had, you know, a lot of slum living around here in the 1800s. And up here on Pershore Street, which we're just coming onto, there was a woman called Cecilia Costello was born up here. Pretty much where we're going to come out here now, and it's a student accommodation now, but it would have been a place called Dean Yard, which was where Cecilia Costello was born. Cecilia Costello is one of Birmingham's most prominent source singers. And in the late 1800s, Cecilia Costello was born here. And she was a woman who learnt her songs from her father, learnt her songs from the workhouse. Not that she was an inmate, but I think she actually worked in a workhouse, learnt her songs there, and also was a screwmaker just on the other side of the railway bridges over there. And she had a mind like a sponge. She just sucked up these songs and just knew them. And when people went to collect them later in life, people like Pam Bishop, she was in her 70s or 80s and her voice was gone. But, you know, so you can hear recordings of her and she's sort of croaking these songs, but there's enough there to make out what she's doing. And she just knew these songs. And they're not necessarily from Birmingham, but they would have been sung on these streets by the people around here. What's also interesting about Cecilia Costello was that she's one of the few original sources that we have, you know, sort of contemporary sources that we have of sort of street or folk art pertaining to the Peaky Blinders. So she had a song that sort of went, "My bloke's a peaky," and it talked about his hat and his sort of nice clothes, and it talked about how you had to cross the road if you saw him coming, that kind of thing. So,
I don't want to mention anything, but you're wearing a very nice cap yourself, John. I hope there's no razor blades hidden in there.
There's no razor blades in there. And there were no razor blades in the original ones. That's a sort of invention of the BBC and the script writing team, I think.
What are you going to sing here for us, near to where Cecilia was born?
So I'm going to sing a song called The Cruel Mother. Cecilia, you can find this on YouTube, actually. There's a recording of Cecilia singing this, and she starts it with a memory that she has of her father singing it to her when she was a child. And it's quite chilling the way she describes it. She talks about how he used to sing it to her to scare her into being a good girl, basically. It's about a woman who has fallen pregnant, not necessarily by her own wishes. And, well, you'll see what happens. But it certainly scared Cecilia long and hard enough into her 70s that she remembered it word for word all those years later.
An amazing setting, because you're right up against a aluminium fence with spikes along the top of it, and behind you is a kind of wasteland where buildings have been demolished, and I can see graffiti on the walls in the distance, and we're right against a brick wall with barbed wire along the top.
Yeah.
What better place to sing?
Can you see across that wasteland there's a big sign from the 1970s that says 100,000 welcomes. So this is
ironic. Welcome
to Birmingham, an industrial wasteland.
There was a lady who's lived in York, all alone and a lonely owl. She's proved a child by her father's clock, down by the greenwood side, as she was walking on her father's lawn, all alone and a lonely owl. She thought three times that her back would be broke, down by the greenwood side, as she was walking on her father's lawn, all alone and a lonely owl. It's there her three sons, they were born, down by the greenwood side, oh. Then years went by, and one summer's morn, all alone and a lonely owl, she saw three boys playing bat and ball, down by the greenwood side, owl. My boys, oh boys, if you were mine, oh, alone and a lonely, oh, I'd dress you up there in silk so fine, down by the greenwood side, oh. Oh, mother dear, when we were thine, oh, alone and a lonely, oh, well, you never dressed us in silk so fine, down by the greenwood side, oh. You pulled out your long penknife, oh, alone and a lonely, oh, and there you took away our three lives, down by the greenwood side, oh. Oh boys, what will become of me? Oh, alone and a lonely, oh. I'll be 7 long years a bird in a tree, down by the greenwood side, oh. I'll be 7 long years a tongue in the bell, all alone and lonely, oh. I'll be 7 long years a porter in hell, down by the greenwood side, oh.
That is scary,
isn't it? Yeah, sorry.
There's a murder, a bit of reincarnation. Well,
it's infanticide, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Emily Portman talks very interestingly about this song, about how it's possible that it's about postnatal depression. And, you know, at the time, it would have just been seen as a woman gone mad and not known what to do and murdered her children. But, of course, there's nowadays that we know a little bit more about mental health and what goes on, that woman may have, you know, been able to get help. And I think that's a sort of really fascinating take. It certainly didn't occur to me. And I love that about people like Emily, who sort of really put their mind and their thought into what these songs could have been about and give us those interpretations. So, yeah, it's a fascinating song. And really quite amazing, actually, moving to play it right here, where Cecilia would have been sung it by her father, like literally across the road, and her father telling her, you know, behave yourself or you could end up like this woman, kind of thing, putting
very
the chilling fear of God into her.
So. Yes. Where are you going to take us next?
So we're going to walk down over to Digbeth. So we're on the outskirts of Digbeth at the moment. We're going to head over to near St. Martin's Church and then walk along New Street.
So we're just walking in the sort of Bullring area now. We're between a Bill's restaurant and a Wings stop and a Five Guys.
Under the shadow of the Rotunda.
Yes, and there's a blue plaque on the wall. What's this, John?
This is John Freeth, the Birmingham poet of Bell Street. So this is the edge of what would have been Bell Street. So John Freeth, we talked a little bit earlier about street singers and street ballads. Most of those street ballads would not have been, again, they would be anonymous. People have been writing them, but we don't know who wrote them, apart from John Freeth. In 1790, there was a pub over just near the Rotunda called the Fox Inn on Castle Street, and it was known as a place where songwriters, street ballad singers, would meet, carouse, and write songs. And somebody, now let me get the quote right, somebody wrote about them at the time that they were sworn enemies of dull sobriety and care. And they were banned from the city.
So they like to drink?
Yes, they like to drink.
They like
to fight, they like to sing. They were banned from the city in 1790. All street singers were banned from Birmingham. They were sent out into the parish.
Because they were a bad influence.
But what happened was that you couldn't really keep a good song down, and they all came kind of flooded back into the city. And from there we start to get the, you know, the publishers and the sort of extraordinary explosion of songs coming out of the city. John Freeth ran a coffee shop called the John Freeth. Now let me get it right. It was the John Freeth Coffee Corner or something like that. I'm not going to get it right now. It's not going to come to me. But he was a man who was sort of known for kind of libertarianism, and he was very into the idea of sort of giving people their chance. He did a lot of work getting poverty-stricken young men into apprenticeships. And he became known as a poet, and I love this fact because it's a clear, there's fate happening here once again. He became known as a poet because he wrote poetry to mark the release of a political figure who was also into sort of the support of liberty, who was called John Wilkes.
So an one ancestor, of his, perhaps?
Well, spelt differently. He was J-O-H-N-W-I-L-K-E-S. So all the things that I hate about when people spell my name wrong, he had it. But
well, we doff our caps to him. Well, you doff your cap to him anyway.
Let's carry on up.
We just come just outside St Martin's Market, which looks like an amazing Aladdin's cave. Let's just go in and have a look. Is this where you used to get your kit?
Yeah. Friday lunchtime, we'd finish over at Sixth Form College in Solihull, and we'd jump on the train. I mean, we were trying to dress like Jarvis Cocker, I suppose. This would have been about 1994.
And round the corner here, boy, if you want some fabric, this is the place to come. There's
fabric and fruit.
Open stalls with bale upon bale of colourful fabrics piled up.
Yeah, 50p for 2 metres.
You can't go
you
wrong,
get
can
that
you?
In London, would you?
You certainly wouldn't.
I mean, it quite amazes me that actually that this bit has been left untouched, because, you know, or if we look over there, we're looking at Selfridges, which, you know, probably may well have been part of sort of the Millennium Project. So Selfridges has been here some time now.
Looks like a spaceship's landed, doesn't it?
It does look
it's covered in chrome discs.
And that's kind of how I feel about this area of Birmingham. It used to be, you know, really kind of the place where you'd come for your bargains and sort of, you know, you get your cup of tea and all of that kind of thing. And a lot of this area, a lot of sort of what was the Bullring, is now this kind of big sort of space age looking place. But you still get these little corner bits here, like St Martin's Market and the Rag Market and all of this bit here, which just hasn't changed certainly in 30
Stalls
years.
Stalls selling all kinds of fruit.
So, yeah, we're coming onto Spicel Street now. Spicel Street. Never quite sure how to say it. And this is in a song that I sing called I Can't Find Brummagem. Across the road behind us, where you can see all the dereliction.
There's a big building site over there, isn't there?
It's just everything's been pulled down. There used to be a pub there called the Ship Ashore. And when I, 16, 17, I played my first gigs there.
And we're between the old church and the brand new Selfridges here, you know, which is an interesting juxtaposition. And then across the road, you know, big diggers working where they pulled the buildings down.
It's
a city in constant transition, isn't it?
Full 20 years and more have passed since I left Brummagem, but I set out for home at last. Too good old Brummagem, but every place is altered so, there's hardly a place that I would know. It fills my heart with grief and woe, I can't find Brummagem.
I had been away from the city for a long time. I lived here until I was 18. I went to university in Wales. Then from Wales, I pretty much moved to Japan, where I lived for about 10 years. And then I worked in the Middle East for a number of years. Anyway, when we were back here about 10 years ago, I brought my kids here. We came in on the train and we got off at New Street and I had no idea where I was. I couldn't even find my way out of the station. And
so much change.
And I was lost. And my daughter was sort of saying, you're not really from Birmingham, are you, Dad? You're some kind of newbie. And we made our way over to the Birmingham Museum. When I got there was this big wall of buttons. It's like the history of Birmingham. And the first button I pressed was this guy singing a song about how he'd been away from Birmingham for 20 years and he'd come back and he didn't know where he was. I was like, I'm having that. Like, that's fate there. So I learned the song. But yeah, when I got to that song and I managed to get hold of the broadside, there was so much Brummy dialect in there that doesn't even exist in modern Brummy dialect, that it was almost, you know, impenetrable. You couldn't really see what was going on in the song. So I thought, well, the crux of the song is here. But it's clearly a song that can evolve. Like, the city is always changing, as we've just said. And so I rewrote chunks that didn't make any sense anymore. And I put the Ship Ashore into it. And I put Spicel Street, which we've just walked up.
As I was walking down our street, as used to be in Brummagem, and now'd nobody I'd admit, there's no one there in Brummagem. And Spicial Street's the great unknown, and so the old church stands alone, and poor old I stands here to groan. I can't find Brummagem.
That's a really interesting example of how folk songs can change, but they're still doing the same job in a way, because it's, you know, you took the idea of the song, but you just updated it for your generation.
Right, exactly.
And you think that's okay, do you? You don't think we should...
No, I mean, you know, Martin Carthy told me, I think he got this from Dave Swarbrick, but he said, you can do anything to folk music, it doesn't mind. You know, for me, you have to have a respect for it, but in a sense, it's raw material.
On Fridays to the ship ashore, we'd set sail for Brummagem. From the ship to Snobs we'd go once more, heady nights of Brummagem. And though it all feels safe for now, this cleanliness won't do somehow. This Digbeth here I wouldn't know, I miss the rogues of Brummagem. Oh, I remember one John Grousey Buckles made in Brummagem. He built himself a country house to be out the smokes of Brummagem. And though John's country house stands still, the town itself walked up the hill. Now he lives beside a smoky mill in the middle of the streets of Brummagem.
This song is more of a music hall song. We do know who the author was. It was a guy called James Dobbs, and he sang this, I think, in 1828 at the Theatre Royal on New Street. So not essentially a traditional song, but a very old song. And, a music hall song, probably.
You've got your guitar out, John, and you're sitting on a bench outside Shepherd's, the hairdresser's.
Yes.
In the Piccadilly Arcade with the beautiful painted ceiling.
It's lovely, isn't it?
And I just popped into the hairdressers and they said that this used to be a theatre and that their unit used to be the ticket booth. And that must have been the theatre you're talking about where the song would have been sung.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've wanted to do this for so long, so I'm really quite excited about this. As I said, it was sung here in 1828 by James Dobbs, who was a music hall, very popular music hall singer. I mean, some of your listeners might remember him.
We have a very youthful audience. What are you talking about?
Among the changes that abound in good old Brummagem, may trade and happiness be found in good old Brummagem. And though no ship ashore we've got, and Spicial Street's a coffee shop, may we always have enough for a cup of milk within Brummagem.
Thank you.
What was it that first drew you to folk music?
So, I was raised in a household. My mum was from Liverpool, and her family has got all sorts of, you know, Beatles-related stories and all that kind of stuff. And my dad was from London, and he was a professor of literature specialising in Shakespeare studies, so he ran the Shakespeare School in Stratford. And Mum was a big Beatles fan, Dad was a big Rolling Stones fan. They both sort of agreed on Simon and Garfunkel. And so that was allowed, Paul Simon was allowed. And then my parents got divorced and Mum married again, and Rob, who came to live with us when I was about sort of 14, I think, he brought with him a love of Joni Mitchell, and names like Bert Jansch started coming into the house and into the conversation. John the Fish, all these sort of names that he was from Cornwall, and he used to go and watch these people sort of singing these songs in Penzance when he was a teenager. And so that became quite interesting to me. And when I was at university, I really started to explore that. And I remember
I was at university at Bangor in North Wales, and I remember I used to play at a place called the Greek Taverna in the High Street, or High Bangor, as they called it.
What were you playing?
I would play acoustic guitar, and I would play Bob Dylan songs, and I'd play Bert Jansch songs, and I'd play Martin Carthy songs. And I'd do it on a Wednesday night, usually in return for 20 Marlboro Lights and a plate of potatoes and a pint of beer. Happy memories, but yeah, what I really remember, I've got vivid memory of being in halls of residence and listening endlessly to the debut album by Martin Carthy. So this would have been about 96, I suppose. And, you know, everybody else was listening to, you know, Westlife and stuff like that, and sort of teeny pop type stuff, and thinking that I was kind of a bit odd because I was listening to this old man with a guitar.
And did you deliberately set out to try to emulate any of his guitar technique?
I suppose the guitar technique, my finger-picking style, comes originally from listening to Nick Drake, who, you know, came from the village next to where I sort of grew up. I was fascinated by what Nick Drake could do. But all that crowd of musicians from that period, you know, from the sort of mid-60s to early 70s, what you might call the Soho legends, really.
From the coffee bars in the Soho,
yeah, right,
folk clubs.
And there was,
yeah,
a club called Les Cousins on Greek Street where they all used to play, and they all thought it was called Les Cousins. and they all thought, one of them told me this, that they all thought that Les was the name of the bloke who ran it, and nobody had ever met him. Anybody met Les yet?
Would you like to sing for us?
We'll go over to the arcade and we'll sing.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Great, yeah. So is this the cathedral?
This is the cathedral.
This is the cathedral here, right? We're standing in the lee of now, actually, in the graveyard around it. And another imposing building, a sort of oasis.
It is an oasis of calm.
Green. So we just come round the corner from the cathedral and we're outside an arcade, another arcade, the Great Western Arcade.
Yeah.
Is this a significant spot?
Well, we're in an area of town called Snow Hill. I talked earlier about the songs and the printing of the songs and the people who published the songs. There was a song publisher up here called Watt. And quite a lot of those people were what you might call sort of entrepreneurial. I think they weren't necessarily out to print songs as their sole form of income. They were there to just try to make a bit of money. And some of them did it extraordinarily well and extraordinarily successfully. There was one chap who, his sort of annual income was recorded as being about £20,000 just from making songs, which would be roughly about £2 million in today's money. So, you know, no small change. Watt wasn't one of them. He, I think, if I'm right, I may be confusing him with someone else, but I think he was arrested for not putting stamps on newspapers, a kind of law and rule that I don't fully understand. Like, I don't know why you would go to prison for that, but not a lot known about him. But he only seemed to have like two songs really on his books, certainly two songs that I've come across. One of them was this song called The Sausage Man, which, you know, when you're flicking through a collection of broadside ballads, titles will jump out at you.
And that one definitely does, doesn't
No question. So,
what's it about?
It's about a man selling sausage rolls, ostensibly. Well, there's a town called Birmingham. The population's great. The toy shop of the world is said, with artisans elate. Well, there's New Street and a street called High. You can see the fashion stroll, but one who always greets the eye, he calls out sausage roll, sausage roll. He calls out sausage roll. I think what happened, from what I sort of read, was that he probably had this song written to almost like as a piece of content marketing, whereby somebody with their broadside ballad would sing this song outside a sausage roll shop and try to get people to come into the song. As I said before, when you got these broadside ballads, at the top of them, it'll often say, to be sung to the tune of such and such. And quite often we don't know the tune. And I think this song had a tune called Mother Dear or something like that. And I couldn't find that anywhere. And my friend Pam Bishop, she is involved in an archive in Birmingham Library of old songs and old broadsides. And I wrote to her and I said, do you know a tune called Mother Dear? And she said, well, let me spend a little time and I'll come back to you. And she came back and she said, it appears to be a rather dirge-like Victorian hymn. And so then it became this really interesting thing, because essentially the song, as you'll see, is a song in which initially somebody's just selling sausage rolls, but it soon becomes clear that the sausage is a euphemism for something else. So essentially what we've got is this song that may or may not have been written about a sausage roll shop. Whoever wrote it used a religious tune and stuffed it full of dick jokes.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
A pretty missus with her mama, she cannot help the whim. However courteous they are, their fancies will begin. Well, to take a slice of a cherry tart, her mama can control, but nothing pleases this maiden fair like this man's sausage roll. Sausage roll, like this man's sausage roll. Now I cannot tell if quantity affects so much his sale, or if indeed the quality perhaps his pleasing tale. Well, I cannot tell you the reasons why this man he will stroll to male and female passers-by and present his sausage roll. Sausage roll, he presents his sausage roll. Well, if mamas will fastidious be, and papas will be blessed, then daughters will not always see their truest interest. Well, I cannot tell you what should be right for ladies on the whole, but I'd say don't stay out late at night and sigh for sausage roll. Sausage roll.
What's interesting about this song is that a friend of mine heard it, heard me sing it, and he said, it's great, it's a really fun song, but you can update this one. And a couple of days later, he came back with a verse that I tacked onto the end of it, so...
Well, on New Street, in more recent times, you can hear his song on high. He's calling out his sausage meats, the best that cash can buy. But the lads and lasses, they turn away. They treat him as the dregs. They don't want his sausage meat. They want vegan, bought from Greggs. Sausage roll. They want vegan, bought from Greggs.
John, that was fantastic. Listen, just in the arcade there, there is a Greggs.
There is a Greggs.
Can I buy you a sausage roll?
A vegan one, please.
Yeah, OK, let's go and get one. John, I wanted to ask you about trad folk, which, from a standing start, has become something of a phenomenon. tell me why you started your podcast and your website to try to get more people involved in traditional folk music.
About 10 years ago, my dad died quite suddenly, and I became quite conscious of the fact that I didn't know terribly much about his side of the family's history. And I had a vague memory of my grandmother, maybe 20 years ago. One morning she'd been at the Sherry and she decided that she wanted to tell me about how she met my grandfather. And she said, well, he was a Morris dancer. I went to my uncle, who's a bit folky, very folky, and I said, can you tell me more about that side of the family history? And he told me that they had met at Cecil Sharp House.
What, your grandparents?
Yeah, as Morris dancers.
And fell in love.
Fell in love.
Across the hankies.
Across the hankies, yeah. We're going to go down that way.
Okay. That means it's in your blood.
That's kind of...
folk music.
You could kind of say that, couldn't you? I went to Cecil Sharp House probably in 2015 for the first time, just to see where they had met. And I went in, and as you know, in Cecil Sharp House, up there in Camden, you'll hear quite a lot of people rehearsing. I stepped into the building and I heard these tunes and I instantly realised I knew them. I suddenly had memories of my grandmother playing the recorder and playing these tunes on the recorder. So I started becoming really interested in what traditional music was and, you know, what it meant to me and what it meant to my family and all of these different things. One of my neighbours at the time was Paul Sarton from Bellowhead, who sadly left us last year. I started chatting to him a bit more about traditional music, and he started saying, well, I know everybody in the folk scene. If you want to find out about these songs, talk directly to them. So I started a blog in about 2016 that was called Grizzly Folk. And the idea of that was that I would just persuade people like Eliza Carthy, Martin Simpson, to tell me about their relationship with traditional song, what it meant to them. The blog sort of went fallow for a few years because I was working on something else to do with, like, my day job, really. And then I left my a job that was taking up quite a lot of my time about 18 months ago, and I was quite ill at the time. I was sort of housebound for a little bit, and I thought, well, what can I do with my time? I'll take those old interviews from the Grizzly Folk blog and I'll stick them on a new site, and I'll call it Trad Folk.
But were you trying deliberately to set out to attract a different audience to the music because you were doing it in a more contemporary style?
I suppose what has made Trad Folk something of a success, when people tell me what they like about it, they like the fact that it's got a sense of community. So what I was really conscious of doing was it had to have a website at the heart of it, but the community part of it had to exist through social media, and it had to be really... have that community sense to it. In this case, I actually focused more on Instagram because I was interested in, could you get sort of younger people, like people in their 20s and 30s, to be interested in traditional music?
And are they seeking out something in the music that appeals to a more contemporary society, do you think?
That's the big question. That's, you know, and I ask quite a lot of the people that I interview that kind of question. What is it at the moment that makes you feel like there is a kind of boom of interest in traditional rituals, music, all of these different things? And most of those answers come back to a mixture of politics. So we live in an age where there's very much an us versus them kind of feeling. I think we're seeing a reaction to this landscape that is very much built around haves and have-nots, and a Tory government that just seems to have lost its head. And so if you can't trust the people who supposedly lead you, then you turn to the things that feel like they've got longevity and real value to you as a human being. And I suspect that that's where this comes from at the moment.
Now, where are we going?
We're going to walk up to the Gas Street Basin. So we hear so often that Birmingham has more canals than Venice, so we're going to go and see if we can find one.
Let's go.
We're walking along now Broad Street, which in my day was known for its nightclubs, and it was quite a sort of leery end of town. But they've done it up massively, and there's an area up here called Brindley Place, which leads onto the Gas Street Base and the canals area, which towards the sort of tail end of me hanging around in Birmingham, I suppose in the late 90s, early 2000s, it became quite a nice place to go. But what's quite interesting is that you'll sometimes see stars in the pavement. You can see one coming up here. It's known as Birmingham's Hall of Fame. So you'll see stars for Noddy Holder.
Oh, yes.
You'll see stars for Jasper Carrot.
This is Aston Villa team of 82.
That's right.
That was a legendary year, I assume, before your time.
Yeah. But up here, we have a bridge over the basin that has been renamed Black Sabbath Bridge.
Now, here it is, Black Sabbath Bridge. Well, what a...
Liverpool, eat your heart out.
And here they are themselves, Ozzy, Geezer, Tony and Bill. There are actual pictures of them overlooking the canal here on Black Sabbath Bridge.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Legends.
It's a place of pilgrimage.
It is a place
of pilgrimage. And I think our music is playing, is it? No. If I were to look at that QR code, I bet I'd hear some Black Sabbath.
Yeah. So this is Gas Street. This area is known as the Gas Street Basin. But yes, this is all canal side. And when I used to come here, it was usually as part of school trips. We would be taken on canal barges up and down what at the time were filthy, filthy canals.
And this would have been the beating heart of transporting the materials
Absolutely.
Needed for the industry that took
yeah,
place here,
let's
wouldn't
take
it?
A left down here.
Well, here is a school trip.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So we've come right down now and there's a bridge over the canal. There's some narrow boats here. There's a pub over there called the Canal House. And a massive sign painted on the side of the warehouse opposite with a great big chimney going up, which says Food, Drink, Cheer, Regency Wharf.
Yeah, I think that building over there has been used in Peaky Blinders as a back shot, like a backdrop.
Yes.
Although I think most of Peaky Blinders was filmed in Liverpool, but...
And that's got a loading bay, hasn't it, that building across the way there with a big
pub.
Crane hanging out.
Yeah, a very popular pub.
And what is the song you're going to sing for us here, John?
So I'm going to sing a song called The Pretty Girls of Brummagem. There's the word again, Brummagem. And this was a song that I found in that sheath of songs that Roy Palmer's widow sent to me. It didn't have a tune to it, so I had to create a tune for it. But I found it quite touching and beautiful. Somebody described it to me as the Penny Lane of Birmingham after I'd recorded it, because it's a character song. There are lots and lots of characters that turn up in the song, and they're all men, and they're all essentially on the pull. But really, as you get more into it, you realise that they're mostly just trying to find love. And it becomes, actually, towards the end of the song, the various characters are so in need of love that it becomes quite moving. And really, it just, again, it's another mark that these songs, this was published in 1833, I believe, and this song sort of points out to us that that really nothing changes. We're all just sort of looking for someone, putting our best togs on to try and impress them. And it's just a beautiful song in that sense. Let poets sing about the fair and praise their wit, their grace and air. The country has its damsels rare that many hearts have fond on. But for rosy cheeks and forms divine, for sparkling eyes and teeth so fine, no other maidens can outshine the darling girls of Brum. The dandy takes such mighty care to spruce his person, curl his hair. He wears whiskers too, a killing pair. He thinks he's not by one done. Then up New Street he struts so gay, smokes his Havana all the way. He swaggers in his fine array to charm the girls of Brum. The shopman saves up all his cash about the street to cut a dash in beauty's heart to make a splash with pride enough to stun one. On Saturday his clothes get out, on Sunday proudly struts about. By Monday he's all up the spout through charming girls of Brum. Thank you. chimney sweep, he cries, oh wow, I hate this vulgar calling now. I means to be a slap a bow, I'll go where there is fun done. I'll wash my face so lily white and sport my Benjamin all right. And shan't I flare up, blow me tight, I'll gain the girls of Brum. An old gentleman of 64, by gout and asthma plagued so sore, inspired by love, he feels pain no more. He's anxious as a young man. Cry, talk of age, poo-poo all stuff. I'm quite the lad, I'm hale and buff. I'm 64, that's young enough to charm the girls of Brum. So in every rank and every stage, the Brummagem girls, they're all the rage. Their beauty charms both young and age, they really are by none done. Their bliss, their lovely faces dear, wherever or when they shall appear. And may good fortune always cheer the charming girls of Brum.
That was fantastic, John. I have to say, just as you were playing there, the charming girls of Brum have arrived and are getting onto this barge. There's a large party of young women getting onto the barge behind you there.
I expect.
And there was also a hen party that went past on the other side
of
the canal.
We're in hen party kind part of the town.
I think you charmed them all.
I suspect that those
song.
Are the charming girls of Italy over there.
Possibly.
This is quite a tourist area. So.
Well, it's been amazing to spend time with you here in the centre of Birmingham and to hear your songs and stories about it. And, you know, it really resonates with the history of the place when we hear you sing the songs on the spot where they were collected or originally sung. It's fantastic, John. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure to bring the songs back here. I do love doing that, to actually come and sing the songs in the place that they would have been sung. But I don't think I've ever done it in quite such a hyper-local way. It's usually on a stage somewhere, but... Not in Greg's.
John, thank you. We really hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed making it. And if you'd like us to go on making more of these podcasts, please support us by making a contribution through Patreon or by buying us a coffee. You can do both things at folkonfoot.com/support us. And we really appreciate any donation, no matter how small. We love making Folk on Foot, and with your help, we'd like to go on making it forever.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.